Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 66 of Nerds United here on the Jitter Eat Monkey Podcast Network. All right, to recap what's going on, it is Tuesday evening. I'm sitting on my couch. I'm the only one awake in my house. My wife is asleep. My son is asleep. Our dogs are asleep. And they're all on either the rest of the couch or the ottoman. So we're all out here as a family. That's what's most important. I am spending my evening, obviously, doing a little production work for the new Nerds United episode, but also watching some sports. We've got the Blues and the Blackhawks, the Cardinals and Cubs. It is St. Louis-Chicago rivalry pandemonium, and we're between the second intermission is where we're at in the Stanley Cup playoff game between the Blues and the Blackhawks, and that game is tied at two, and the Cards and Cubs headed to the bottom of the ninth, and the Cubs beating the Cardinals 2-1 as of right now. And I'll tell you what, this is not Nerds, you know, typical Nerds United conversation. We don't talk a whole lot of sports here, but I am a sports fan, and I think maybe I'm getting too deep or philosophical here, but I do remember, you know, a time where it was like the jocks and then the nerds and then, I don't know, the smart kids or pretty people. I don't know. I never personally fit into any one particular mold, and I've always loved sports. When I got into radio, it was as a sports broadcaster. So I'm watching sports tonight, and I did watch The Flash, the new episode of The Flash, and it was very good. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it because I haven't talked a whole lot about the second half of the season of The Flash, but it's really good stuff. And I think the episode that Kevin Smith directed is beginning or airs next Tuesday, I think this next one to air. Anyway, we learned a little backstory tonight of Zoom, and I'm getting off topic because I'm supposed to be talking about sports. Here's the thing. I am from Illinois, but I'm from Southern Illinois, and I grew up very close to St. Louis. So, like, my baseball team leaning, obviously, is the Cardinals, and I'm a Blues fan. I'm based on my location now. I know an abundance of Cubs fans, not as many Blackhawks fans, but Cubs fans. And I'll tell you what, if the Cardinals don't get a little offense going in this series, I'm never going to hear the end of it from my Cubs fan friends. And a lot of times they're okay, but man, sometimes they're just obnoxious. And I know, because Cardinals fans are obnoxious too. So it's okay. Understanding of their plight. Anyway, what are we talking about? Nerds United, new episode, episode 66. And speaking of Missouri, that's where I was this past Saturday for Cape Comic-Con. I did take my wife and our infant son. Oh, I hope that gets out of play. It didn't. Damn. Sorry. Yeah, now I'm giving play-by-play. That's not exactly what we wanted. But did take my almost four-month-old son. And, when I was around, they had a really good time. When I was not around, for example, when I was in the panel room recording what you're about to hear, they were walking the floor, and little man got a little overwhelmed, overstimulated. So they had to take a time out and go chill out in the van. That's right. We have a van now, and that's weird to say, but, this episode 66 is, subscribe to all the Jittery Monkey podcasts, or at least, you know, this one and the one that really is current with new content, that being My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. Ooh, is that going to get down? Nah, I don't think so. All right, two outs, damn. My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, the panel that you heard, the episode you heard this past Monday night, or Monday morning, I should say, was Cowboy Bob Orton and Terry Funk, a couple of WWE Hall of Famers. Just a great discussion. Had to spend some time on the volume on the levels on that one just so that you could hear it okay. Yeah, that felt better. This is the second panel that was recorded, and it features a St. Louis-based artist. He is the art director for Lion Forge Comics in St. Louis. Tremendously talented, and as I told him, I've been wanting to have a conversation with him for a couple years, but it just hadn't worked out. I had a chance to record this panel, and the first half of it or so is him just kind of talking about his life, his career, and then he gets into some Q&A. You can't really hear the questions, but I think the overall context of his responses, you'll get an idea of the questions that were asked. I had a chance to visit with him later. Oh, that's going to go foul, damn. I had a chance to visit with him after the fact. Super nice, super excited and passionate about his work, his craft, his upcoming projects. So episode 66, I think you're really going to like it. It is with artist... Again, art director for Lion Forge Comics, Lorenzo Lozana. Here's episode 66, and I'll see you in just a pretty short turnaround. We're going to have another new episode for you, another new interview Friday morning right here on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network and Nerds United. So thanks for listening, subscribing on iTunes, Pod Directory, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not on Instagram or, for that matter, really, I'm not doing anything in the Snapchat realm, at least as far as the Nerds United stuff goes, but subscribe, comment, you know, leave a review, things like that, especially on the Facebook page. I really want that Facebook page to get booming, because that is how, you know, if you like something or comment on something based on Facebook's whacked out algorithm, then more people are likely to see it, yada yada yada. All good times. So enjoy Lorenzo Lozana from Lion Forge Comics and the 2016 Cape Comic Con, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, here on Nerd United.
Comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Me as an artist, I started out fifth grade drawing, and my mom was a nurse. I learned how to draw anatomy at an early age because she had her nursing books, and in the back they had the pages with the skeleton on it and the organs, and it was grossed me out. And then there was the page with the muscles. And as a little boy, I was influenced by the muscles, and I was like, oh. So I was moving the acetate, and I could see, you know, as a kid, I analyzed the muscles. I could see, without skin on them, how the body was put together, muscular. So I practiced drawing that all the time. And I went to school, and a young man had a stack of comic books, and he challenged me to an art contest to draw Superman. And I'd never drawn Superman before. But I did it, and I said, what do I win if I win? And he says, I'll give you a stack of comics. And who voted? We had the kids in the class vote. And so I won. I drew Superman because it was more anatomically correct. Because I knew, you know, when you're a kid, you just draw muscles. You don't care. But I was more, you know, into the anatomy. And I was, you know, I grew up more, I'm more of a what we call an art nerd. There's a lot of people out there who are comic nerds and, you know, in the sci-fi and all this other stuff. But I'm an art nerd, and I just kind of gravitated toward the comics because it was a visual medium. I started out, I was a portrait artist in high school because I was just trying to, you know, hit on a girl. And I told her, I was like, you're gorgeous. I must draw you. And that, it worked. I drew a picture, and I was thinking, oh, we're going to go out. Yeah, this is great. She saw me the next day, and she's like, oh, this is a beautiful picture you did of me. I showed it to my mom. Everybody loves it. And I was like, all right, I'm in. You know, and she says, I have a favor to ask you. I said, anything for you. And she goes, could you draw my boyfriend? So then I was like, okay, yeah, this might not work. But I drew him. I ended up being friends. He was the captain of the football team, of course. So yeah, but I started my career off drawing that way. I went to Jackson Square in New Orleans, Louisiana. And there was all these artists out there, and they were doing portraits. And people were giving them money for it. And I was like, get out of here, you know. So I sat down. I had a sketchbook and some colored pencils. And I was just like, you know, I'll do this, you know, and I see what happens. And it was just on a Saturday, and a friend of mine drove me over there, and I ended up making like $300, and I was 17 years old. So I come home, and my dad was like, "Where'd you get all that money? Did you rob somebody?" And I said, "No, Dad, I drew pictures, and somebody gave me money for this." And my dad was a mechanic, and he was a welder, and he was just like, you know, he totally was not, you know, behind this art thing at all. He wanted me to be a mechanic. And so I took the money, and like most kids, I didn't go blow it. I went to the art store because I noticed when I was out there, all the artists had easels. You know, they had paints, they had better supplies, and they had better paper and all this and that. So I went to the art store, and I spent my $300. I bought me an easel. I bought me some paints and stuff, and I bought pastels and more colored pencils and stuff. And then I went back the following weekend. Me and my buddy, he became like my agent. He's out there telling people to come over. And I wasn't charging much the first time. I was charging like $20 a picture, you know. And all these famous people, I thought, they're painting oil paintings and stuff, and I'm just like, I'm nobody. And they said, you could charge more. So I charging $50 a picture. I was afraid, you know, and I was getting it, and people were paying me, but I was like, oh, this is amazing. So yeah, I just kept at it. I figured if I can find people who will pay me for my art, I must continue doing this, you know. And I went on to a career, and I got my first comic book job in probably won't know how old I am, but in the 1986, I got my first job in comics, and there was no internet, so I just sent it through the mail to a company in Sacramento. I liked one of their books I saw at the comic store called Silver Wolf Comics. I did a book called Steck, and I saw the characters that they had, and he sent me a letter saying, "You're hired," and I was like, you know, that was kind of amazing. That was my Christmas present, and I drew the first issue of Steck. It was a transforming robot of all things, and I was a little bit older, so I wasn't really into Transformers or G.I. Joe. And my first title I ever got to work on was a transforming robot. He could transform into a boat and a microwave oven, and it was just really, it was just terrible. But and then later, my second book that I got to work on was G.I. Joe in 3D for Blackthorn Publishing in San Diego. And I knew nothing about G.I. Joe. It was so sad. And he was like, "What?" I said, "Well, I was working around the time all the kids were sitting and watching cartoons on TV, so I wasn't into those. I was in the Thundercats, you know, and earlier I was in the Speed Racer and all that cool stuff. Didn't even know that was called anime at the time. I was like, who knew?" But so that whole progression took me through a long career in art, and that's why I said I was obsessed with art. I one time fell asleep in the library, a local library. And they locked the doors on me. So I was basically living in the art section. So I'm totally a product of the library system. I grew up studying everything from the Disney library to all the books and post-impressionistic art, interior decorating. I even tried to study architectural design. I hated not knowing how to do something artistically. So I just pushed myself. I was obsessed. You know, I'm a strange individual. But again, if it dealt with art, I had to know it. And that kind of got me, you know, we're down deep south. I'm in Gulfport, Mississippi. I was like, there's no jobs for anything that I do. So I had to get out of there. I had to escape. And I made my way to St. Louis, Missouri. a family was coming back here. And I said, "Where are you going?" They said, "Well, we're going back to where we, you know, St. Louis." And I said, "Is that close to New York?" And they were like, "No, but it's closer than here." And I went, "Sold." So I was that kid in that picture with the, you know, with his stuff on the stick, you know, his bag, and I just walked out the door and said, "Dad, I'm heading to St. Louis," and he's like, just gave me this look, and I was like, I had to get out of there. Was just no job, so it was a little strange. But I came here in '91, and I came to St. Louis in '88, and I traveled with this family all over the place, but I was just doing freelance comic books and stuff like that. I learned how to do screen printing because someone saw me do a signing for the G.I. Joe book at a comic store, and the guy came in and said, "You know, hey, you're pretty good. Could you do some artwork for us for some T-shirts?" And I said, "Sure, no problem." And then I kept doing that, and he kept calling me up, and then he finally hired me full-time to come work at a screen printing shop, and I went, "I could do that, you know." So you come in and you actually got custom artwork. So if you design, you wanted something for the shirt, you told me, I just drew it and you got it. Whereas a lot of people, when they're doing shirts, they just get clip art, you know, it's just standard. Here's the football player. You know, everyone's got the same football player. But for me, I would draw that football player doing something dynamic like Spider-Man. And they're like, "Oh," so then your school got the better, you know, football player if you got one of my shirts. Yeah. So, and that's kind of, I did that for 4 years, and I ended up becoming the manager of the screen printing place because the boss's wife had passed away, and he didn't know how to run the store, and I took care of it. And then somewhere in there, a lady came in and wanted me to do some shirts for her church. And I was a little smitten by her, and I was like, sure, I'll do those shirts, you know. And I kept you know, doing some stuff for her, and she kept inviting me over to the church to go to the church, and I'm like, nah, I don't want to go. And she finally said, well, how about come to a co-ed volleyball game? I'm like, I can do that. I like volleyball, you know. So I came in and played volleyball, and I started going to that specific church and everything. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't want to go to church chasing a woman, you know. I wanted to go for the right reasons. And so I hung out there and ended up finding my wife there, my first wife. But anyway, so this is probably way too much information. But anyway, as I speed along, while I was working at the T-shirt place, a young lady was there. She left, and she went to work for a toy company that was downtown St. Louis. And I'm like, nobody believed my boss. There's no toy company downtown. So it was just hidden. No one, they don't brag about it. And she was there, and they asked, do you know any other artists? And they said, there's this guy, Lorenzo. He draws anything. So they asked me to do some samples for a Tarzan comic they wanted to put inside the Tarzan toys that they were doing. So I did some samples, and I came downtown, and I went in there just to, thinking I'm going to just get a freelance job to do a comic book that goes inside the toy, right, you know, package. And no, these people kept coming in, going out, looking at stuff, and they're like, how would you like a job? I'm like, well, that's why I'm here. And they're like, no, how would you like a full-time job? And I'm like, doing what? And they said, designing toys. I said, I don't know how to do that. The guy comes up to me, and he puts his hand on my shoulder and says, don't worry, we'll teach you. And after 8.5 years, I became senior product designer at this toy company. We did the toys for Independence Day, Mars Attacks, Lost in Space, Godzilla, Powerpuff Girls. We did tons and tons of different items, and we did a lot of Disney toys, actually, too. And I learned a lot of things over the years. And each job I went into, my artistic knowledge of just everything I studied when I was at the library came into play, you know. It was just, I just became a, like I said, an art nerd. I study styles. I was the only guy at the toy company who can draw bunny rabbits and Godzilla. Everyone else, there was a kid who came to us who could just draw Godzilla and monsters and creatures. It was Rick. Rick could draw cars, but he couldn't draw cutesy. He couldn't draw monsters. He couldn't draw people. But I could draw the car. I could draw the Godzilla. I could draw women. I could draw anything. I could draw the weapons, the spaceships. And they were like, where did he come from? He's crazy. So in a weird way, they kind of like let some of the other artists go, and it got us down to, it was 7 of us at one time. Now, then it became 4 of us. And my name was on pretty much all the products that came out. I did all the action figures for the Independence Day movie, so Will Smith action figures and stuff like that. He thought that was kind of cool. I got to talk to him on the phone and everything. He sent me photos from the shoot when they were out in the desert filming that movie. I was like, this was great, you know. They had my action figure on the Tonight Show when they were interviewing him and stuff. It was pretty deep. So I was just, you know, I was in the moment. But 8.5 years, the company folded in 2002, you know, after 9/11 and 2001. And I was one of the higher paid guys, so I got laid off first. I walked out the street, went 2 blocks to my studio on Locust and 10th and Locust, because I had 3 of my guys who I was kind of training to do this stuff, and they already had a studio down the street. So I just left, went right there and started my own studio called Mach 1 Studios. And what we did, I trained these guys to do what I could do, well, as much as I could, you know, as much as they would listen to me. And we did art, and we did it for advertising companies. So, like, if you came to me or they needed some artwork for an ad, because it's kind of a dying art that people can just draw with their hands. Because the age of computers, everyone thinks computers do it. And I said, computers are just another tool like a pencil or a pen. And it's up to the individual to do the work and everything. So, and me being one of the older guys, I didn't know how to use the computer because at the toy company, they wouldn't let us because I thought they would have to pay me more money. All I knew how to do was use email. That was it. But I learned how to use all these programs that call Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign. You have to learn how to use these things to stay up to date. And I was starting to do my artwork. I still draw by hand traditionally, but I scan it in and I do all my other stuff in the computer, color it and ink it. And that's kind of how a lot of the comic books are done these days. So. But over the years, I just got better and more honed and at it and stuff like that. our studio broke up after 3 years. I went off and did children's books. I did a Thumbs Up Johnny series, drew 20 children's books. So, yeah, it was like a lady hired me on the spot. She was a writer, and I did. Then you probably wouldn't even recognize the artwork because it was a weird style. He was a thumbprint cowboy, Thumbs Up Johnny. And people thought he was an onion, but he was a thumbprint. And he had a horse named Buddy. Yeah, it was pretty cool. And we did that for a while. And then just kept going. I worked at Brown Shoe Company. I started designing shoes, ladies' shoes. Because if you can draw anything. And they hired me to just draw shoes. And I was like, you know, I want to know how to make them. I don't want to just draw them. Because same with the toys. When I got there, I can draw anything. I just wanted to know how to make everything from scratch. Because once I know how to make it from scratch, then I can. That's another occupation I have. You just keep adding things to your thing. So when I do seminars at schools in St. Louis, and we did it for some seniors in high school, and they were all trying to figure out careers to go into. And she brought me in, and none of the kids believed I existed because I'm some weird little animal. They were like, there's no way you did all of this. You do, because, you know, I also did animation, toy design, shoe design. They're like, I even designed a vacuum cleaner. I mean, it's just freaky, weird stuff. So they're like, how do you do that? I'm like, because I can draw. And I have an open mind. I treat every job as a challenge, and I need to know how to do it. If I just said, all I want to do is draw these cartoons, I don't want to do anything else, I'd be like one of my friends. He lives in his basement. He doesn't go out much. Yeah. They think he's a vampire. It's Paul Daly. I'll say his name. But anyway, it's a challenge to do all kinds of art. And so I'm that, I guess, just rare person who just wants to do all kinds of styles of art. And it goes into any medium. So anyway, let me open it up to some questions. If you guys have any questions about anything, that's pretty much my history. Yeah. Yes. Right now, I am the art director at Lion Forge. And the company was formed 5 years ago by a couple friends of mine, and they wanted to get into the business of doing comics. And they called me up. I was I had just finished up doing the children's books and doing the freelance design for shoes and stuff at Brown Shoe. And they were like, we need you to come in-house. And I'm like, no, I'd rather work from my house. I do everything from home. I'm too old. I don't want to be in an office anymore. And they were like, No, we need you in because we got a lot of work, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, for me to come in, you got to pay me a lot of money, and I need to be able to be off one day a week or work from home one day a week. And they went, no problem. I'm like, cool, okay. So I did that, and we were there, and we kicked butt. We went to all the big shows, San Diego, New York, and we showed up. We had a big splash. We had the big banner, and our booth was this giant arched booth. It was amazing. It was something else. But we were trying to do something totally different. We were trying to reach the fans that aren't in the comic industry. And people were like, what do you mean? It's like, well, there's, you know, it's different when you're preaching to the choir. You don't have to sell someone on comics if they already love comics. We were trying to reach the people who don't realize that this medium tells stories, just like movies and television and everything else. And you can just, anybody who loves reading books should get our stuff. And the world is changing now where bookstores, see, in Europe, in France and any other country, comics are revered. In Japan, I mean, you know, I'm like a doctor or a lawyer in those countries. Here in the States, it was for so long, comics were like, oh, it's a nerd culture. Nobody cares, you know. It was looked down upon. What do you do for a living? You draw comics. Ugh, okay, next. You know, that's usually how it was. But now, like, it's a popular thing, and you have tons of people just doing it just for fun and stuff. But for me, I took it seriously, so. Thank you. That's what we're still working on. The biggest challenge is trying to figure it out. And the irony is, just recently, you know, not that we discovered YouTube, but we noticed that there is a lot of people on YouTube who a generation of people who go to video games more than they do comics says. In the past 30 years, kids have kind of gravitated out of comics to video games, and that's just huge. It's hard to compete with that. You know, that's a different type of market, different type of mindset. And they were saying, well, we're losing kids because right now a lot of comics from the major companies were done by people my age and older. And so they're doing the books for themselves and for people our age. They're not doing them for little kids. And and that's where the problem lies. I said, you're forgetting about when you were little. You know, when I bought a book in the 70s and 80s, anybody could buy it. You know, you could buy it. My kids could buy it. Anybody could read the book, and it didn't have to have labels on it. And it was just fun entertainment. And that's kind of where I'm with my career. That's where I'm going. I've created things that I'm trying to get back to that, where anybody could buy it. You know, remember when you watched the movie Indiana Jones? You and your whole family could go see that. Action, adventure, kept you on the edge of your seat. You're just, like, loving it. Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to do that with that movie, you know. And a lot of things kind of, like, got a little further away from it. Because as people got older, they forgot how they were when they were kids. And the kid in me is still there. So it's the one thing I tell people. Remember your childhood and pass it on. Don't forget your childhood and get cynical and wish everything was just dark and moody. And, you know, I heard all the arguments in about the Batman versus Superman movie. They were like, oh, because we're all used to happy Superman. You know? Not dark and gritty. Everything's dark and gritty. He talks like this. Even he talks. It's like there was no contrast between him and Batman. You know, they were both not smiling. So sad. Anyway, so I'm trying to put the fun back in comics, and Lion Forge is hopefully trying to do the same thing. I say that because, you know, we're a work in progress. So, you know, but hopefully everything will it'll work itself out, and we'll be that catalyst to get the marketplace turned around, where the books are, you know, we do books for everyone, as we call it, comics for everyone, and we do books for kids as well as adults, and so. We have our Roar titles are for kids, all our Roar titles. And that's where Care Bears and Punky Brewster and Saved by the Bell are. Yeah. And Knight Rider, Airwolf, and all the other ones they're just general audiences, I should say. A lot of old rehash, but new ideas and new storylines for old stuff. Because we also, I don't know if they've announced it yet, but I probably shouldn't announce it. But we have... Yeah, we're doing a giant robot book, yeah, of a famous 80s TV show coming soon. Yeah, no, it's no. Dang it, boy, you guys are good. no, it's, I don't know, did they, I think we signed those contracts. We're doing Voltron. Yeah, and I don't know if you guys seen it, the Netflix has a new show. And it is Voltron. It is. I haven't seen it, but 3 episodes, amazing. They're like, it's the Voltron we all know and love. The style has been updated. The story's been updated a little bit, but it's Voltron. For Voltron fans, this is the show they've been waiting for. Because they've done incarnations and other things before, but this time they've hit it. You know, I looked at the style guide and I was just blown away. I was like, wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Everybody's there, Honk and Pidge, you know. But and we're all fans of those things, and as we grow, so we always want to make sure we put the level of quality into it. Now, in my job description, the art director is supposed to take care of we set the tone and look of book of the certain titles, and then we're quality control, making sure that the quality of the stuff is the highest quality that we can maintain on a monthly basis and get these things out on time and so forth. And I look at a lot of new talent reviews, you know, when submissions come into the office and stuff. We have editors, but art director position, that's kind of my job and so forth. And keeping things looking good and fun. You know, that's my plan, you know. So, but the future of Lion Forge is looking good, looking bright. And everyone's got their, you know, down to the wire. We're like, we're all ready to push it forward, you know, because we're like, we're different than most companies. We're not run by just a bunch of guys who love the medium. We're trying to transcend the medium a little bit, you know, and hopefully everything that we do will be turned into cartoons, movies, and toys, and all the other, you know, we call it transmedia, that we've all got, you know, our skill sets are in that, and hopefully that way younger generations and older, everyone can, you know, grow with that company because we're the new kid on the block, you know. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, with licensed properties, we have guidelines we have to follow. With a lot of the NBC properties like Knight Rider and Miami Vice, we have to send script approval to them, and they have to look it over to make sure everything's kosher before we can move forward and draw the books and stuff like that. With creator-owned stuff, creators can just do their books and pitch them to us. And then we at Lion Forge will look them over and see which ones would fit our company that we would feel proud to put our efforts behind and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of, I guess a lot of different companies, they all have different business models, like Image, you know, that's a different one. It's a big creator-owned business model. You bring the book to them and they split it fairly between you and so forth with the printing and whatnot. But our company is set up a little bit different at the moment. We weren't as open to that until now, and so we're trying to get the word out. I think we need to put out a press release and so forth to tell people that we do that too. Bring your book to us, and we'll become a haven for creator-owned properties, and hopefully we may find something like The Walking Dead. You know, you never know, you know. If you let someone be in control of their own properties, and we just handle the publishing end of it, and you know that's a little bit better for people where they go, oh, this is a good place where we can put our property. And so I think that's the future. That's the future of the market. That's where it's going, because advent of the internet and YouTube and Google and all these other different places where you can do stuff. And Amazon, you can put a book out tomorrow. You can design, draw a book, your book, make a PDF, put it up on Amazon, and sell it tomorrow. You don't have to go through any of this other stuff that what I had to go through when I was younger. I was like, man, I can't afford $2,000-$3,000 to print my book in color. You know, I don't have $1,200 to print my book in black and white. You got to have printing costs. And then wait a minute. Oh, now I've got to market it because no one knows about it. I have to go to all these shows. This is a big expense to go here. You know, if you're not a guest, you know, you're just on your own dime, and you've got to go here and do all this stuff. So it's an investment, and you've got to kind of work it out. And then you have to ask yourself, is this what I want to do for sure? You know, because it's not a big payoff return unless, of course, you get a hit, and you see how far and few between those are. You know, The Walking Dead, the first year, it wasn't a hit. And as in comic book form, it slowly was a slow. The first book sold okay. The sales on the second book went down. And they were like, oh, no. And then all of a sudden, the third issue, the sales went up a little. And the fourth, they spiked some more. And they just kept going and going and going. And then Robert Kirkman, and like, holy cow, we got a hit on our hands here. You know, I just finished watching a documentary about that, and I was impressed. I said, yeah. And no one knew that that was going to just explode like that. And now it's everywhere. It's, you know. And that could happen if people are open to new ideas and new ways of doing things. I have a motto where there's a million variations on every theme. And so when someone tells you that everything's been done before, don't believe that. Because if you think about it like this, if you create a superhero, sir, you in the hat, if you create a superhero, when you create that superhero, it would be completely different than what I would create. You know why? Because you're a unique individual, and you may think differently than I do. So you see, that's where you get different thoughts. You know, I have some superheroes that are coming at the end of this year, and they're not exactly what everyone else thinks of a superhero should be, and I just treat it completely different. I actually, you know, with one of my characters, I treat it as though what would happen if it happened to me, you know? Yeah, and I say try that angle. And there's some books out there similar, but not from my point of view, because I'm unique. I'm different. And that's kind of how I put it to people. I say there's a million variations on theme, and people say don't do superheroes because Marvel and DC do superheroes. I go, well, you know, they haven't done one like this. And that's how you get new stuff. But if you completely close the door and say we're not going to do superheroes because they do them, then you've closed your eyes to that idea. So that everyone goes off and they do different things like slice of life or some other stuff. I'm going to do vampires. I'm going to do werewolves. I'm going to do zombies. You know, and I go, there's every genre, you can continue to do whatever you like. Do what you like, have love and passion for it, and it'll show through the work. And other people will gravitate to you. Not everybody's going to like it, but if you can just get that little bunch of fans who like your stuff and want to hear your stories, that's how you do it. And that's the big key to it all. Good storytelling, good characters, and have fun with it. Because a fan can tell if you're having fun or not, or if you're just recycling the same old drivel at them, you know. So anyway, any more questions? Draw every day and draw from real life. Practice, practice, practice. I draw every day. Even it's just kind of habit forming to me. I've been drawing every day since fifth grade. And I just, over the years, you'll just see your own work get better from week to week, month to month, year to year. And depending upon what you want to do, you know, if you've decided that's what you want to do, then go all in, you know. And talk to, when you go to shows like this, you find the professionals and you ask them questions. You know, it's good to geek out and have them sign your arm and stuff, but it's better to walk up to them and go, what paper do you use? How long does it take you to draw that page? You know, stuff like that. And that was me in my first convention I ever went to. It was in 1987. And I met Howard Chaykin, the artist of, at the time he was the artist of The Shadow. He worked for DC Comics. And Howard was a kind of blunt individual as he was drinking a little bit at the time. And his wife was hitting him, you know, telling him calm down and quit cussing. And I was coming up to him and I had my portfolio on his table. And I was scared. I didn't want to show it to him. And I walk off and I realize, oh, no, this isn't my portfolio. This is his. So I have to come back and tell him so I can get it, because mine had a radio bumper sticker on it. My sister worked at a radio station. So I came back and I handed it to him. I said, I got mine mixed with yours. And he says, oh, let's see it. And I went, no, I'm not a professional. He says, that's okay. Let's take a look. And I was just, you know, I think 18 years old at the time. And I was just like scared. He opens it up and he just goes on. He's like, oh, boy. He says, oh, look at this. These pictures are so pretty. Okay. And he goes on. He teaches me a lesson. He says, where's the storytelling? You know, and I'm like, what do you mean? He says, and why are all your people so beautiful? You know, but again, I told you he was a little inebriated. So he turned around. And he says, look at all these people in here. Look at all these ugly people. Look at these fat people, skinny people, ugly people. You have to draw everybody. He was just going on. And I was like, oh, as a kid, I whine. No one's going to buy a comic for like, you know, 75 cents with ugly people. And he says, no, you have to draw everybody. You got to draw the cab driver. You got to draw the mom, the dad. You got to draw the guy who's, the guy picking up the garbage. You gotta draw everybody. You gotta represent everybody. You can't just draw pretty people all the time. All the handsome superheroes and stuff and the super chicks. He was like, oh no, he was just going on. And I was like, okay. And then he took some what we call acetate and he put it over my pictures and he started showing me how to do layouts better, because my pages were just tragic. And he says, you have to start with an establishing shot, a two shot, a close up, and this. You have to tell where your characters are. You have to tell the story from left to right so they can follow it. And so it was a harsh lesson he told me right then. You know, he said, your skills as an artist will get better, but you need to open your mind up to telling stories. This is what this business is about. It's not about pretty pictures. It's about telling stories. You know, art is suggestive and preference. You may like my art. You may not like my art. So you're not going to win there, you know. So, and then it's been a struggle for me as an artist, because I tried to draw every style imaginable so I could just cover everything. That way you'll like it and you'll like it and you'll like it. I can draw anime. I can draw this standard traditional. No problem. And, that was me being greedy. but over the years, I finally have to let go of certain things and go, you know, it's good enough. Just get it done. Get it out there. Tell your stories, you know, because it's just more fun that way. And I've got a lot of people now waiting to hear my stories, because I've worked for so many people and I've done their stories. I've worked for the toy company. I've done their characters, their toys. And it's time for me to come step to the front and do my stuff. And you just get to that point, you know. And that's kind of where I'm at. This is 2016, and I've created a character back in 1987. And they're like, wow, how many years in the making, you know? And I'm finally going to get it done, because I have a nice crew of people helping me. You know, I'm not just doing it by myself. I've got people who help me letter it, help me ink it, help me color it, you know? And so now I've got a good support staff. My wife is fully behind me on this. She's like, you're never going to know if you don't put it out. If I never do my stuff and put it out, you'll never know if the public wants it or not. And again, you only have to appeal to a certain niche of people. And once you get that, you're good. Just cultivate it, go to shows, you know, put the stuff out either online, a webcomic or whatever as well, and print, and just write it out, tell all their stories. So that's kind of where I'm at, and that's where I'm going. And I have one book that I'm working on. It'll be out in August, and so I'm really happy about that, finally, after almost 30 years. So, yeah. Oh, any more questions?
Would you say, maybe going back to the character from 1987 that you came up, do you have a favorite original character of yours? One that you just, you know,
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, I've created a bunch. I've created over 20 different characters. You know, where some people are like Eric Larson. He created Savage Dragon, okay? And that's all he ever wanted to draw. And he's been doing that for years, you know, since he started. They started Image, and that's it. He only works on that one thing. He doesn't create anything else. He doesn't. He only wanted to tell that character's stories. But me, I want to tell stories in every different medium. I want to tell stories over here, 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 the Matrix. I've got so many things in my head. This is why I don't sleep at night. I wake up at 3 in the morning every night. Can't go back to sleep because the wheels are turning in my head, and I've got stories and ideas. I got to go write it down, sketch, draw, whatever. And this is, I don't know if that's a medical issue, but anyway, I just have to do it because I got to get these stories out of my head. So now I've actually learned to sit still with a sketchbook and fill them up. But definitely, I have Scarab. And Scarab I created, it was the year, I created him in 92. But the year I was going to put the book out, my father passed away. So I got depressed and I just couldn't do it. And I know what, and I, over the years, I just let it slide by the wayside until my kids grew up and they're like, when are you going to put this book out, Dad? It's like the stepson, I mean, the little brother that they've never seen because I just haven't finished it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it now because the pressure is immense. But this time I'm having fun with it and the stories are just coming to me. And it's a good thing I didn't put it out back then because my stories for the character are much better now. I filled in better holes. I'm a much better storyteller now than I was in the 90s. So I'm feeling good about it, and hopefully people will be receptive to it. The character is Scarab. He's kind of a modern-day Egyptian warrior. His name is Jamal Jordan. You got to have those cool names like that, you know, Peter Parker, you know, Lois Lane, yeah, Jamal Jordan. You know, I just did that. And he's an African-American character, but he's not told in the sense the way most people tell it. I just tell a story about a young man. That's it. And a lot of friends were like, oh, you didn't make it this, this, and this. I go, well, I'm not doing any preconceived notions. It's just about him, his life. It's sort of a little bit of me and a lot of my kids. And he's a kind of a jerk. And he's not a hero at all. And he's not even perceived to do anything like a hero. His mind just doesn't work that way. He's on a mission. And the mission was given to him by the Egyptian god Isis and Osiris to protect mankind. And that's pretty much it. And he's got to stop all these creatures from entering our realm and our world and destroying the earth because Set, the evil Set, who was Osiris's brother, has been banished to this other realm. And he's trying to send all these monsters and creatures to destroy the planet. And Scarab's the only thing standing between them, and that's what he fights. He fights these monsters and creatures and demons that come out to try to stop him. But they're also trying to get one of his amulets that he has because it's a part that opens up. Well, anyway, it makes a staff that opens up the 10th portal. The 10th portal. And once that 10th portal's open, then there'll be hell on earth. So Scarab is the only thing that can stop it. So he's doing it. At the same time, he ends up encountering other Midwest superheroes, you know, and he has to learn to kind of become a hero in that sense and to care about other people's plight and stuff like that. Because he's on this mission. He just sticks to it. He only fights these things at night. He doesn't care about anything else. He just lives his life. He's a little selfish. He can't help it. But it's all about his development as a person as he realizes he's got to care, you know. And it's and his real goal of it all is he wants to find his father. That's pretty much the gist of the whole thing. His father was the original Scarab in the 60s and 70s. And his brother, older brother, resents his dad. He thinks his dad left the family. And the younger brother, who was just a baby when the dad was disappeared, he's like, well, you know, he doesn't know what happened. The older brother resents it, thinks the dad just ran off. And the younger brother wants to know what happened to him. You know, they filed police reports, missing persons, never was found. Doesn't know what happened to him, can't find him anywhere. And later he realizes that his dad was the original Scarab, and so he can't tell his older brother, but he's trying to find him. And that's his whole purpose. He thinks if I can find my dad, I can reunite my whole family. And that's his whole true purpose in the whole book. And I just told y'all this, don't tell anyone. But it's hidden underneath this flashy, gorgeous art that I'm doing. I'm just stylistically, I'm putting all my artistic ability into it. The stuff I love, the Art Nouveau stylistic panels, just going crazy with it, making it as gorgeous as possible, action packed and fun. So that's Scarab, and that's what I'm working on. Yes, yes, guidelines. Yeah. And a lot of it comes from real life, too. You know, there's characters in the storyline who basically are reflections of people I know and friends. You can't help but put them in there, you know. I do that a lot, you know. But, yeah. So, kind of. But also, you know, I've created more stuff. I've created Susie Winter. And here's one. I'll just throw this out to you. This shows you completely 360. Susie Winter is a story about a young lady who becomes kind of like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer type character. Or what's the thing? Scooby-Doo. What if Scooby-Doo had, like, Velma or Daphne went off on their own? There's no dog. There's no Shaggy. She goes off on her own, and she fights monsters, but it's like the monsters from the Universal, you know, Vampire, Mummy, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and those type of creatures like that. And it's really a comedy, and her grandmother kind of helps her along the way. And all she does, she's trying to collect the best kind of shoes possible. She's a shoe collector. She's obsessed with shoes. But she's trying to find a job and doesn't realize that, well, now you're kind of a monster fighter, monster slayer. This is kind of a full-time job doing that. She's like a weirdness magnet where everything keeps coming toward her and happening. And this is like in New Orleans. And she's it's done in an anime manga style, which I learned how to do that back in the late 80s, early 90s. So I'm finally going to do my own. And what I do with styles is I look at something that's cool, and I blend it to my own. I'm the guy with the pot. It's all the melting pot. I like that. I like that. I like that. And then I put a lot of me in it, and I stir it up. That's kind of how I am. It's kind of like the weirdness that you saw with The Matrix and old Tarantino films. It's just everything in there. You remember the first Batman movie with Michael Keaton? And it looked as though, when you saw the cars on the street, it looked like it was in the 50s or 60s, but you couldn't tell. But yet they were still dressing like they were in the 80s. And so you're like, what kind of – it didn't matter. He put the – different realms together. He just made the world. It was Tim Burton, and I kind of think a little more like that, where you try to make something universal that everyone likes it, and it's any world. And I have a book coming out called The Facilitators. This is the other one I'm working on, and it's basically just the Rocketeer meets the A-Team. Jetpacks and ray guns, and it's just crazy. Diesel punk action, it's just fun. And these guys, there's three of them, they used to be in this war together, and now they're off. They have a nightclub they run, and one guy's a mechanic, and he soups up all their vehicles and weapons and stuff. And one of them doesn't like to fly, just like B.A. from the A-Team. And it's just fun. I just said, this is going to be fun. This one's got the bigger tone of the Indiana Jones type stuff. And it's just through the roof. We're just having a blast. Rick Burchett himself out there, artist of 35 years in comics, is helping me do layouts for this book. And he just loves it. And so I was like, just him liking my concept encourages me along, you know. And he's a professional. He knows what he's talking about. So I'm like, yeah, okay. So he's egging me on. I'm doing that, and we're trying to get that one out. We're probably going to do a Kickstarter for that. And that's Kickstarter is that place where you can get crowdfunding for your properties and stuff to pay for printing and stuff like that and production. So. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot of guys that we do work with. Cullen Bunn is a great writer who works with us. My buddy Jim Mafu, who I kind of work with, I discovered him at the age of 15. He's gone on to become super famous in the West Coast. He did our Miami Vice remix with Joe Casey. And so there's a lot of, for me personally, there's a lot of them. There's a long list too. Adam Hughes, you know, Brian Stelfreeze. There's so many different artists and writers who I would love to work with myself. But right now, it's just when we pick a project, we just got to find the right niche, the right person, the right writer for that specific project, instead of just trying to force someone into something that they're not used to or like, you know. And we want the writer to like it as much as the artist to like it, and because then they'll do their best work on it, you know, and not cut corners. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, recently that happened to me because when I first created it's another book called Catrons, created back in 87, that was my plan as a kid. But I didn't realize that, wow, this we'd have a new realm like this where they're really accepted by the general populace as well. And so when I created the Catrons, it was simply because I was I wanted to know more about the Star Wars characters. I wanted to know about the Jedi Knights. And so when I created my Catrons, it was a reflection of my frustrations. I was like, I'm going to tell the story that they wouldn't tell, you know. And so I went ahead and I have a big Space Opter 3 movie deal picture epic that I'm worked on. And it actually would fit. So I told that to my kids the other day, and they were like, no, Dad, do this. No, do this. Add that. And it's just fun. But, yeah, and that one's got an outer space feel to it. It starts here on Earth, and it ends up in the third movie there in outer space fighting a big battle and before they come back. It's just, yeah, and that's the only one that I saw in my head as a movie where it kind of writes itself now. You know, Scarab is connected, but I didn't see him totally as one. Even though I did pitch that to a film company years ago, they were asking for an African-American superhero. And I said, I got one. So they looked it over, and they were wanting to do it, but they couldn't get budgeted for it. They couldn't get the funds. So it went by the wayside a little bit. But that's your ultimate goal. Most people say when you design something, you just do it for the fun. You just want other people to read it and accept it. But you want it to get on the grand scale. I mean, if you got it, you know, me, I have an ego. I'm like, I want everyone in the whole world to see this, and some aliens too if they like it. But you know, you don't limit yourself to just these people here and those people there. There's a lot of people who just care that their 10 friends like something and they're good. But you, me, I would love to leave a legacy, you know, like Walt Disney. You want to just create tons and tons and tons of stuff, and after you're gone, people are still enjoying it. Imagine that. So when people say it can't be done, I always point to that. And I'll leave you with this. This is my motto for almost pretty much everything. Keep moving forward. If you're not moving forward at what you're doing, then stop and go do something else. Because if you're not having fun at it, keep moving forward. And that's been me for years. I just keep going forward. And I've hit the point where it keeps me positive now. And I don't surround myself with negativity or negative people. I can't do it. I can't wallow in self-pity over this situation or that situation or the political atmosphere. I don't even worry about that. Keep moving forward. Do you, and have fun at it. So thank you. Oh, you have a question? Uh-huh. Well, nowadays it's so much easier. Nowadays there's sites online, print on demand, where I'd be like, wow, I have no excuse now not to do it. Whereas before, you had to print 1,000 copies. And I'm like, well, I don't want 1,000 copies. I only want like 10, or I want 100. Well, now you can print. There are companies that will print you one comic book. You know, so if you only wanted, I only need 5 so I can go pitch it for a movie. I can get 5 printed, and it doesn't cost that much. You know, print on demand, or there's websites like I want to say Blam, and they have a site where you can put your product on it, and you can send everyone there, and they see it, and you don't print anything. When they order it, then they get a copy in the mail from that company. Print on demand, print the order. So you send all the people to them, and they print it there. So you don't have any back stock or a warehouse full of books that you have to lug around or anything. And I thought, wow. So it's just a whole new world. YouTube, all those places you can just advertise, promote, Facebook, Instagram. I'm still learning all these things. Well, I'm on Instagram as Lozana Art, my last name. L. Lozana Art, first issue, last name, Art. And I'm on Facebook under my name, Lorenzo Lozana. I have an art page as well, so just befriend me that way. And on those two, you can pretty much find me anywhere else. I've got a YouTube channel, but it's not active doing anything yet. I'm going to start doing tutorials, how to draws, and stuff like that. So, yeah, because my time is being a little bit more freed up to where I'll be able to do that on the weekends and stuff and try to post at least 3 times a week. How to draw this, how to draw that, you know, and give people pointers, because everyone always asks me, do you teach? And I'm like, well, it's always harder just to teach. But on the internet, you can teach everybody all over the world if you just put up a tutorial and show them, you know. So, yeah. Anything else? Anybody else? Question? All right. All right. Thank you.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.